This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. I'll be reading from Sumner Madison's book, A Field, Portraits of Wisconsin Naturalists, Empowering Leopold's Legacy. The first chapter is about Increase Lapham, and this is the third time I've read from this chapter. As a way of introduction, I'll read a little bit from Wikipedia about Increase Lapham. Increase Allen Lapham, born in 1811 and died September 14, 1875, was an American writer, scientist, and naturalist whose work focused primarily on what is now Wisconsin. He made maps of the area and published numerous books on the archaeology, biology, and geology of the region, and discovered both the Panther Intaglio Effigy Mound and the Milwaukee Formation. He founded the Wisconsin Natural History Association and served as the state's chief geologist for 2 years. He also lobbied Congress and the Smithsonian Institution to establish an agency to predict the weather around the Great Lakes, and this became the National Weather Service. And I looked up the Panther Intaglio Effigy Mound. It is a ground depression in Fort Atkinson. The effigy is a reverse mound, a depression in the shape of a panther or water spirit created by Native Americans somewhere between 700 and 1200 AD, before the arrival of settlers. In the mid-1800s, 10 of these reverse effigy mounds were found in Wisconsin, but all except this one have been destroyed. It was added to the National Register of Historic Places in 1970. It once lay in a group of over a dozen raised mounds, including some conical mounds, a bird, a bear, and some linear mounds. All these others are now gone, lost to farms and home building, leaving only the Panther Intaglio in a small city park on the bank of the Rock River. And the Milwaukee Formation is a fossil-bearing geological formation of Middle Devonian Age in Milwaukee County. It stands out for the exceptional diversity of its fossil biota. Included are many kinds of marine protists, invertebrates, and fishes, as well as early trees and giant fungi. Once a prolific source of fossils, the Milwaukee Formation exposures are now mostly buried, inaccessible, on private property, or located in areas where collecting is prohibited. Most of these exposures are or were located along the Milwaukee River and the Lake Michigan shore. So a little bit of an introduction into a little bit that Increase Lapham did. And now I'll start reading the third part of Sumner Madison's first chapter about Increase Lapham. And Sumner writes, "Natural history observations were important to Increase, whether it was geology, botany, or animal life, and phenological events were something he wanted his children to note, as indicated in the following letter to Anne Marie, his wife, excerpted here." And this is dated Detroit, Friday afternoon, April 29, 1851. "My dear wife, no remarkable incidents, no hairbreadth escapes to relate. I have thought of the observations every time since I left. Tell Mary and Julia to keep a sharp lookout for the purple martins so as to note their first appearance. I would like to have them find out when the plum, peach, apple, and pear first open their petals. Yours affectionately, Increase." And another letter, Horicon, October 12, 1851. "My dear wife, I'm going to spend a few moments in communicating with my dearly beloved wife and family. Whatever comfort it may be to you and to them to hear from me, it cannot exceed the satisfaction which I enjoy in writing to you. Next to seeing and being with you, it is my greatest source of happiness. I send you a sketch of Lapham's Peak, as the neighbors around have decided to call it, as it appeared when it first burst upon our astonished sight. It's about 400 feet above the country and around 824 feet above Lake Michigan and 1,402 feet above the ocean. The weather is bad, barometer going down, so that I fear some time will be lost, for I cannot survey in the bushes while it is raining. I have found no acquaintance here yet and do not wish to until tomorrow. My appearance here with compass and other curious apparatus has excited some curiosity among the barroom loafers, and my negative answers to the questions whether I was on the railroad survey, some plank road, or some village plat have only tended to heighten the mystery. We have a poor house, poorly kept, with occupants as usual besides those of the human species. But these things are small matters compared with the delights of a life in the woods. Yours affectionately, Increase. And Sumner writes, in correspondence with the editors of the Milwaukee Sentinel, Increase presented an informative travelogue of the landscapes he encountered and people observed when away from Milwaukee searching out effigy mounds. Here are brief excerpts about two events. He's in Kingston, May 29, 1852. I looked up where Kingston is and found it very near Lake Puckaway and somewhat near the old canoe route from Green Bay down to Portage in the lower Wisconsin and the Mississippi, and one of the roads on the map today leading out to the west of Kingston is Indian Mound Road. So here's Increase Lapham's letter. Editors, it's a charming ride on a pleasant summer day to leave Washera and drive around the three beautiful lakes lying northwest of that place, as we did yesterday. They are Fox Lake, Lake Emily, and Lake Maria. The bushes are generally high, presenting, as we ride along, many beautiful views worthy of the pencil of the landscape painter. Broad, undulating prairies may be seen in one direction stretching off as far as the eye can reach. The oak openings and the patches of more dense forest, the rocky cliffs, the wooded islands, all tend to give an agreeable variety. These lakes lie in the dividing ridge between the waters of the Mississippi and those of the Great Lakes. The favorite evening amusement now about the country taverns appears to be playing, jumping, and other manly exercises interspersed with rational conversation, by listening to which one may always gain some new ideas and perhaps useful information. IAL. And the next letter, at Dell's house, June 2nd, 1852. A ride of about 20 miles through the woods much of the way, with scarcely a track to mark the course, brought us to this place, which is one of the most interesting and remarkable localities in Wisconsin. The Wisconsin River is contracted by steep rocks to a very narrow channel for a distance of about 2 miles, the water rushing through, especially when high, with great violence, dashing against the rocks here and whirling with frightful rapidity there, boiling and foaming at a great rate. Mr. Parker takes much pains in showing off the many wonders of the place and takes the lead in showing the way along the narrow shelved rocks with the boiling cauldron at a fearful depth directly under your feet and through the caverns where it is necessary to use all fours and no great man can pass through. We had no difficulty. This spot is just the place to suit a naturalist. Agassiz would be in ecstasies all the time. Among the many other new and interesting plants I found, the northern scrub pine, Pinus banksiana, and the Labrador tea, Ledum latifolium, and the woolly Hudsonia, Hudsonia tormentosa, all subarctic plants, and seldom or never found south of the Dells of the Wisconsin. At 6 last evening we had a storm of wind and rain and hail, such as I never before witnessed. One hailstone was 1 1/6 inches its longest diameter. The windows on the west side of the Dell house were completely riddled, and cattle ran in every direction as if mad. One of the most curious effects was the effect of the hailstones falling in the water of the river, the whole surface being covered with jets a foot high, constantly playing, presenting a rare phenomenon which can be compared to nothing else in nature. Just as the storm broke away, a raft made its appearance, having encountered the dreadful storm while passing through the dells. When the water is high, the passage of the dells becomes quite a nice job, requiring an experienced pilot to prevent everything from being dashed in pieces against the rocks. I.L. And Sumner writes, not quite 2.5 years after beloved Darius passed away, Increase decided to go home to Ohio alone. It had been years, over 20, since he had spent any part of winter with his mother and father. He delighted in describing the journey and family reunion to Anne and their children. Mount Tabor, Ohio, January 23, 1853. My dear wife and children, I suppose you will expect to hear from me occasionally while on my present tour. To gratify you, I propose to write an occasional letter. After leaving you, I had no ill luck until the next morning, when I forgot my black walking stick, which has so often sustained me in times of weakness, and which I fondly hope might sustain my tottering footsteps when old age creeps upon me. I wrote back to Mr. Edgerton requesting him to send it to Milwaukee and to drop you a line so that you would know where to get it. Had a pleasant stage ride across the prairies from Janesville to Rockford and by railroad to Chicago. On Thursday, I was whirled rapidly over the Southern Michigan and Northern Indiana Railroad to Toledo on the Maumee River in Ohio, where we had oyster soup for supper. The next day, was hurried up early, crossed the Maumee on a steam ferry, and went 46 miles by railroad to Bellevue on the Sandusky Road, where we arrived just 1 hour after the train had passed, so I was compelled to lay here 23 hours, waiting for the next Cincinnati train. But to make the most of a bad matter, I had a fire made in a little private bedroom and went to work on the American Paleontology, just as naturally as if I'd been at home and the hours slipped by. It was not until Saturday at 2 p.m. that I was set down at West Liberty and looked eagerly about among the crowd, thinking it possible that some of our folks might be there. "Here I am," said a voice, which proved to be my father's, he having seen me thus employed. After dining at Mr. Runkle's, we rode out home in a snowstorm, the first they've had here. My mother made so much ado about my coming home that the girls were alarmed and ran to see who was killed, thinking that certainly something dreadful had happened. It is now just 22 years since I was at home in the winter, and when we had just about as much snow as we have today, and my horse had the same trouble with snowballs collecting under his feet, the snow laying upon mud. Last evening, the first number of the Oakley Herald, a family newspaper devoted to literature, science, and the fine arts, edited by William Lapham, Esquire, was brought in and read to the family circle. It had some good pieces, good hits, and some very queer poetry that made all of us laugh. This paper is in manuscript and to be published or issued weekly. Among the items was mentioned the carpenter who made use of moonbeams in the erection of houses, and the mason who tried to find a hen that could lay a brick. Your affectionate husband and father, I. A. Lapham. And then Sumner writes, among Lapham's travels, one of the most notable trips was to Lake Superior in 1858, which was reached via train and then steamboat through the Straits of Mackinac. The stated purpose of this trip was to explore on foot the Pinoki Iron Range east of Ashland and assess the extent of the iron ore resource. Here are extended excerpts from his personal notes, handwritten in ink on blue-lined notebook paper. August 31, 1858. The bay or harbor into which we entered between Madeline Island and the main shore is a magnificent one, perfectly safe for boats to lie in during the most severe storms, landlocked on every side. the old buildings at La Pointe, and at the place of the old fort and of the middle fort present a striking and rather picturesque appearance. The old fort is now abandoned, and the middle fort nearly so, the principal part of the present inhabitants being at the most westerly place known as La Pointe. These forts, as they are called, are the remains of the establishments of the American Fur Company, consisting of strongly built stores surrounded with a fence of high pickets set into the ground. These pickets are mostly of white cedar, and though they have been in the ground 20 years or more, yet retain a considerable degree of soundness and strength. And then the next letter is dated September 1, 1858. At La Pointe, Lake Superior. Remained at La Pointe waiting for a steamboat on which to go to Superior, which is the name of the embryo city at the head of the lake. Much of the time was spent in botanizing and checking on a copy of Gray's Manual, the plants growing naturally on the island, Madeline Island, thus showing the flora of this northern part of Wisconsin and how it compares with the south part of the same state. There are many remarkable differences in the vegetation of the two localities. Found 2 or 3 small mollusks under the old logs and pond lily leaves in a lagoon near the middle fort. And the next is dated September 2 and 3. Remained at La Pointe, still waiting for a boat. Continued observations on the island. A heavy blow from the southeast continued throughout all the time since my arrival here. This has caused the delay in the arrival of the boat, which has been lying by at Copper Harbor, waiting for it to pass over. At length, the North Star arrived, and we attempted to go to Superior, but in the night the wind increased to such a gale that the boat was put about and run into Bayfield, where she remained until the morning of September 4th. By 12:30 we were in Superior. On the way, we passed among the Apostle Islands and could see the high lands of the North Shore. The steamboat channel is so near the middle of the lake that we could not well make out the character of the shores. From the boat, we could see the mineral range that skirts the south shore at only a short distance from the coast. On the return, we saw fishermen here drawing their gill nets near the middle of the lake, a dangerous employment, I should think, in these times of stormy weather. The sandstone brought here from the St. Louis River is of the same character as that examined at La Pointe. On September 5th, 1858, returned this forenoon in the same boat to La Pointe, where we arrived at 1:30 and set off immediately in a small sailboat for a voyage across Chequamegon Bay to Ashland. The sail across from La Pointe to the head of this bay was a very pleasant one, the wind being favorable. The long sandy point, Long Island, that separates this bay from the waters of the lake is a very remarkable one, partly covered with trees. It has a counterpoint on a smaller scale extending from Madeline Island. And I will stop there and finish up this chapter next week. And I thank you so much for listening to my reading of A Field by Sumner Madison and learning about Increase Lapham. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders.